So I'm not sure what I can say as an opening line other than, as it flies close, other than thanks for letting me follow the phone. Great scheduling. It was either this or Wednesday at 5, I think were the two choices that I had going for me. So I realized that I didn't actually put a PowerPoint on this machine, and I realized that last night. So instead, I'm doing my slides with HTML and CSS. So, yay. Breakfast of champions. So I think this is the right room, right? Okay. Nerd Dinner was a sample that we did last year, and it was a cheesy sample. And I'm surprised that people actually used it for much, because it was really just like, you know, CRUD, create, read, update, delete over two tables. It's not a particularly interesting sample. And beginners really love it. They're like, oh man, I learned everything I know about MVC with Nerd Dinner. Oh, I hope not. And then like the really advanced guys say, the guys at my work learned everything they know about MVC with Nerd Dinner. Ah! You know, so like saying that I learned everything I know about MVC with Nerd Dinner is both like a really good thing if you know nothing, and it's like really a horrible thing if you actually know something. So, you know, some people have said that it's a virus, you know, and it's seeping into the children's minds. I wanted to try to make Nerd Dinner something a little bit more interesting, a little bit more significant. And since everything is social, I wanted to see how many social things that we could do with one site that was a cheesy sample over two tables. So let's talk about some of the things that we can do. All of this, of course, will be up on the web and up on CodePlex and will be available and is open source. And I would encourage people to help me out because a lot of people have put up features and suggestions for Nerd Dinner, but not a lot of help. So thanks, open source. So if I go to nerddinner.com... on the incredibly fast Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino internet, apparently routing through California, you can see that in the text box there, we're doing geolocation. So one of the emerging standards that I added here is the support for geolocation. I put down emerging standard because I've got two slides. I've got emerging standards and I've got open standards. Emerging standards, I would just say not yet baked. Now, people might argue that geolocation is totally baked, but it's still kind of a draft. And, you know, if I'm running, like, this build of this browser on a laptop that has a GPS and I've got a good satellite signal, then, yeah, geolocation rocks. But it's challenging. Google has their AJAX API for geolocation. Firefox has support for geolocation. Windows has, like, GeoSense for Windows.com and the location sensors. This is all really complicated ways to get geolocation information. And there's multiple levels of geolocation. You can go from like IP to lat-lon, but then you have to go from lat-lon to place name, right, which is a different kind of a thing. And I think we've all had situations where we've used geolocation and it said, you know, welcome from Virginia, right, and you're in, like in New York. So like now, like it's saying I'm in California. I think it's an emerging standard. But what we ended up doing was we just put in some JavaScript here. We're using some MS AJAX to do this on a navigation call. And we're just calling get.json and we're doing a little bit of a JavaScript to call what John Galloway and I found was kind of like the easiest geolocation and the most free and flexible geolocation data that was out there, which is IP info DB. And we make a JSON call to these guys and pull back, in this case, region name and country name. We didn't really want to get you down to a street name. Other things we could have used would be like geoshim and geometa.js, which are different JavaScript things that you can put on top of gears, the Google stuff, the Bing stuff, yada, yada, yada. There are many, many levels of this, but even though it's trivial, it's worth the effort. If there's something in your application that can benefit a little bit from some location. In this case, I didn't even actually automatically search, right? I didn't want to necessarily be wrong and then search for it. But it's just a subtle little thing. It took minimal effort on our part, and it makes the user feel like, oh, cool, you know, they care about me, even if I don't live in California. So we added geolocation, and that's all doing right now on the client side. We'll look at a little bit of geolocation on the server side. So we wanted to take that geolocation and do something interesting with it. So we made a controller called the services controller. And in this one, we created a services controller that's going to host a lot of the different social services that we're adding. And one of them we called Flare, Because everybody's got flair, right? Everybody wants bling. They want it on their blogs. They want it on their shirts when they work at Applebee's. And in this case, I look at a number of headers and then use the geolocation service, except this time on the server side, talking to the same service, figure out where they are, and then we use our dinner repository find by location to figure out where the person is. Then we generate some flair, and this flair can then be hosted on someone's blog. And this was kind of the original plan for Nerd Dinner, was that someone would have a blog, and John Galloway did this feature and helped me out with the Nerd Dinner sample. On the lower left-hand corner there on his blog, he's actually inserted a little bit of HTML and JavaScript, and he's figured out, let me do a refresh and see if any new dinners have come in the Cal. Oh, there you go. Apparently there's a beach party with John. So the idea was that it would be geolocated. This isn't dinners near John. This is dinners near you, the visitor. Because Nerd Dinner is interesting, but it's only interesting if people show up on the site. So I want to leverage all of the traffic that John and all the different bloggers have and then get the information out to them. So one line of JavaScript or one iframe, depending on how you want to do your flair, plus geolocation suddenly means that you visit a New Zealander's blog, but you're in Vegas and they tell you about Nerd Dinners near Vegas. And again, very minimal effort becomes a much more interesting, much more social experience. So we're going to add, we've added this flair. Again, all of these implementations are done open source and online. In this case, the flair, we talked about this a couple of different ways. We try to make all of our methods fit in like one screen, just because it tells you that they don't stink too much, or that you're really good at abstracting stuff away into helper functions. The flair, in this case, the one that John ended up using was an iframe. And he just has a little bit of JS. If there are no dinners, bummer, why don't you host a Nerd Dinner? Otherwise, spin through the dinners. The other thing that we did is we've implemented short URLs. This is like the new hotness right now, right? If you want to do anything, you have to have your own tiny URL. You know, you're always seeing, it was like Flickr's got like flic.kr, right, or whatever. I don't know, they got that from Korea. So I wanted to get this one. You know, that would have been awesome. I mean, as if you were like a connoisseur or kind of a gourmand of tiny URLs, as I consider myself, that's way better, right? So who owns .nr? Well, it turns out that there's like five people who are like, I don't know, descendants of Robinson Crusoe that live in this country of Nauru. Any Nauruans here? In the house? No? Yeah, apparently they didn't make it over here. So check this out. Nauru owns this. And I want to register. TLD registrar. So you kind of get the idea. They want you to pay them $500 in like unmarked bills. And here it is. This was done by Frank, apparently, who lives, here you go. You go look in Wikipedia. Yeah, this was set up by Frank of Nauru. They can just say, yeah, it's Frank. He lives there. Frank Jones? No, Frank. He lives on the island with the rest of them. They want you to wire money to them. And this is pretty scary. Oh, I thought that said beach. So there's no buttons to push. Basically, you have to wire them $500, and then you have to do it with the Western Union. So it just felt a little bit like, you know, I am the Prince of Nauru, and I will give you a domain name if you only. So I thought nerddinner.com was $5 at GoDaddy, so I was like, GoDaddy, and I was like, yeah. So if anyone wants to give me $495 to, like, you know, maybe that would be like, what, two shorter, maybe four shorter, we could, like, that would save a lot of bandwidth. So I would really appreciate that if you could help me out and volunteer. Thanks, open source. So these tiny URL thing is actually really, really easy. If you remember with Nerd Dinner, we took nerddinner.com/dinners/detail and we made a pretty route so we could go nerddinner/ and then the number. This was a route that was done with the custom routing of MVC. And that route just looks like this. See where it says pretty route? So the route is just ID. What's interesting is the constraint that says, well, only things that are numbers. So then all I had to do was register that tiny URL so that it pointed to the exact same place and then did a URL rewrite. You could use URL rewriting in IIS7, or you could use ISAPI rewrite from Helicon Tech, or you could use whatever. But that was it. And it seems like kind of obvious once you see it. But wow, okay, tiny URLs weren't all that difficult to do. You could also use things like Bitly Pro to do that. So these are little tiny things that we're adding to the application that I think make it a lot more pleasant. One of the other things that we added was social sharing. So once you have these tiny URLs, you want to get them out there. You want to spend some time spreading the word. So if we look on, here's Dinner with Megan Fox. Apparently we're still waiting for her confirmation that she will be there. It'll be in any time now. So we'll zoom in here. So we added our click and select tiny URL stuff here, and then sharing on Facebook and Google and Twitter. These things are not standards, but they're really just fancy URLs, and each of them has a different style for doing this. But again, really, really minimal amount of effort, and just a matter of really looking stuff up and implementing it, and then making sure that things are appropriately encoded. So on the details page, for example, with Twitter, you just say twitter.com, source equals, and then status, and then you build up a string to tweet that a dinner is coming. Same thing with Facebook. So if I can tweet that. Do-do-do-do-do. Oh, you ever misspell your name, always? I'm thinking about making like an autocorrect kind of a thing. Oh, you ever misspell your password, always? Dun, dun, dun. Twitter's up. You ever lock yourself out of Twitter, always? So that is coming from the URL and then going right into there. Same thing with Facebook. Tiny little thing to do, but makes people start feeling more connected. So we're adding all of these different little social things. We start to know where they are. We start to make things available via Flare. Once they show up somewhere, we allow them to share that information and spread it around. So that's sharing, and all of that is done based on URLs. At some point, someone, I hope, will come up with a standard to make that easier. But for now, each place has their own way of doing that. You can start the timer anytime now. If I can have the full 60 minutes left, that would be cool as well. I think we've got 45 left, actually, right now. I keep looking at that. I'm like, wow, still 60? Do I have enough content? One of the other things that we did was we wanted to make it so people could RSVP for a particular dinner. And this is a little bit more interesting, a little bit more difficult. So if I click on RSVP, down on the corner here, you can't really see it, and I'm afraid I can't zoom in on it, but I'll show you the URL. It says RSVP Twitter begin. I'm going to click on this, and we're going to do a little post. Oh, I'm already logged in. So look what happened there. That's cool. I'll do it twice. See, I just RSVP'd via Twitter. It worked because I was already logged in, and I had already given this application permission. So let's go back to the Twitter, and let's log out. Mandalay Bay Internet. So here it says, the application NerdDinner would like to sign you in via your account. This is using a thing called .NET OpenAuth that was formerly called .NET OpenID. This is a library in .NET that lets you talk to things like Twitter or OpenID clients and do stuff like this. So what I ended up doing was going into Twitter and then signing up for a developer API account. And then they give you some secrets. I have a really complicated password that I'm apparently incapable of typing in a room full of large, scary people. Okay, this is really a problem. You ever have one of those situations where you type a password, and you know it's like that kind of muscle memory password, and when you typed it one time, you were shifted one over to the left? And then you can only type it when you don't look at the keyboard? I get into those situations a lot. So I go into Twitter, and we'll go into my settings here under connections. On the right-hand side here, it says developers can edit your applications here. So I have two very important Twitter applications, Nerd Dinner and then Tweet Sandwich, which lets you tweet your order to Quiznos, which is important to me because I'm the only client of this application, and my local Quiznos is the only people who care. But you can go and get the full code for Tweet Sandwich on my blog, actually, if you'd like that. So Nerd Dinner has these keys. You see here it says consumer key. Look, there's four massive support for the Nerd Dinner application on Twitter. You go and they give you a key and a secret. You can reset these. You put them in your application, and then this is the secret that you talk to identify yourself to Twitter. And then OpenAuth is really smart about this. Let's go over to RSVP. There's a begin and an end. And you just say, start sign in with Twitter. And the .NET OpenAuth guys and Andrew Arnott, who work on this open source project, have even set up some MVC support. And you can download this soon. He actually wrote this on the plane, and it should be out either today or tomorrow. And you've got really good MVC support where you can do things like sign in with Twitter and just return that as an action result. So as a consumer of this, I get to kind of abstract away that whole idea of the authorization process. And then on the finish, if that finishing the sign-in worked out, I can go and get the dinner and I get their screen name because their screen name comes out of try finish sign-in with Twitter. All I had to do was sign up for this account, and now suddenly I'm enabled for this particular scenario. So that's one example of an open thing that we can do. Another one, and again, each of these is tiny things. I'm trying to show you all these tiny little things because I think that there's a lot of applications that can benefit from these small bits of flair. It's almost like a programmatic piece of flair, right? Nothing here is particularly complicated. They're all about 20 lines of code, but in aggregate, it becomes pretty darn interesting. Notice up here in the corner, Nerd Dinner shows up in the search box. So then I could go and search from here and see if we tested that, which we have, in fact, did not. What the hell? So, John, you're in the front, and I'm going to blame you because you're in the front. So, John, can you raise your hand and bow? Don't search on Scott Goo. You think that was he searches for you? Is that what you said? I think it's just don't search ever, I think is what...
The exception message has what you should do. It says call order by before you call skip. You probably poured in some link to SQL code yet.
Is that the voice of God or Phil Hack?
Same.
Oh, Phil Hack. So... is it possible that it worked earlier, Phil?
Yeah. If
so it is?
If it was linked to SQL, it probably worked before, and then it just ported
it in EF. But this was totally written in EF, dude.
Oh, okay.
So you don't know why it doesn't work?
I have no idea.
Well, that's not good. So this was not the demo that you were looking for. All right. I'm going to figure out why that worked yesterday. The interesting point was not that my implementation of search that John is currently debugging in from the front row, don't worry about that, is not the issue. But what's interesting is that we used a thing called Open Search. And Open Search is a thing from Tatham Audi at Redify. And this is another open source thing. All of these little standards for you and like what the takeaway for you, the audience, is, one, be aware of them. So what I'm hoping is that as I show you all this kind of parade of demos, you're going to go, oh, that's what that called, or I didn't know what that was, or I can take control of that, or I can do this. That's thing one, awareness, OpenAuth, open search. The second thing is that in all of these examples, there is either a .NET API that lets you get to that in a really easy way, and they're usually done by very enthusiastic and supportive community members, and if there isn't, it's usually a clean JSON API or a nice clean URL or some XML that you parse. And you can start making these things cool. So what OpenSearch is a library that enables this OpenSearch handler. I go back to my site and do a view source, and then search for OpenSearch. We've got a link up here in our meta area that says application/OpenSearch description, OpenSearch.ashx. And that's a little XML file. Now, you could certainly do this yourself. You could write your own. You could read the OpenSearch spec. But what's great is that Tatham has done the work for us by making this handler that we just have to override. And then we override get results, talk to our repository and go do our thing, and then return new search results. So the tragic part about this, despite the, of course, that it's not working at all, is that you can also add this to Explorer. You can actually go and get these OpenSearch things. I think it's OpenSearchHandler.ashx. Was it? What's that? Services. Thanks. It's so nice when the audience knows your code base better than you do. See? Thanks, audience. That really helped. OpenSearch. Thanks. There we go. I have such a sense of community right now that I'm so happy that I can screw this up on stage and that it won't affect my speaker scores. I really appreciate that that you really appreciate that I will lose my job if you give me a no. You can add these search connectors to Windows. People really don't realize that OpenSearch isn't just a thing that lets you enable Firefox and Chrome and IE to do searches on a site, but it's also built into Windows. So I just visited that directly, and I can say now add. And I can actually, if I knew what I was doing, call OpenSearch from here. And of course, the location cannot be searched because of a web server error. Thank you. Click to diagnose. This is where it's going to email me and tell me it's a problem. What you would have seen had this worked was the dinners actually showing up right there. So this is a standard format that already exists. If you ever use like Google Chrome and you start typing and then it says tab to search, or if you used IE and then it lights up and puts a little star by a site to say that, hey, I can search this. Really, really minimal amount of code to set that up, and even made better by the OpenSearch open source library that Tatham did. That worked yesterday, but I'm not bitter. Micro formats are another thing that takes minimal amount of effort. Let's go ahead and look back at that dinner with Megan Fox and hit the site with Firefox. And I've added an add-in to Firefox that is this toolbar here. The page doesn't look any different, and that's important to point out. But the toolbar has noticed that there is an event on the page and a location expressed on the page as well as contacts. So these are micro formats. This isn't actually another XML file. These are agreed upon CSS classes and markup, the semantics within the HTML itself that are broadcasting this information. And this isn't just used by obscure Firefox plugins. This is used by search engines. There are micro formats for calendars, for contacts, for locations. Excuse me, for locations. There are these for reviews of things. There are videos. So any time that you can provide additional context for something that's going on the page, someone's going to consume that. Now that I'm saying there is an event here, when a search engine comes and looks at that, they're going to look at the date, and they're going to know. And then more and more search engines are using these micro formats. So for example, here's date start. You have to put it in an abbreviation in a certain tag. So the text that you see is May 28th, but the abbreviation DT start in the title is the micro format that provides that value and that extra information. So it's almost like an HTML file and an XML file are kind of the same thing, right? This is what they talk when they say semantic web. This is what they're talking about. And in this case, this even enables features that I didn't have, like add to Google Calendar or add to 30 boxes, which I don't know what that is. So that's cool, too. Now, these standard formats, though, go now beyond emerging standards to open standards. Let's look at, actually, iCal first. I added a bunch of icons up at the top here, and one of them is this calendar control. I can click Add to your calendar, and I'll look at this in a second. And I get an ICS file, right? This is the iCal files that'll go directly into Outlook or whatever registered calendar client that I've got. But the more interesting thing, I think, is this one here, which is actually a calendar feed. And this has a webcal colon whack whack extension. So rather than HTTP colon whack whack, this says webcal. And when we get into Outlook, it says, do you want to go and update this and subscribe to this calendar? And I'll say yes. And now I've got a feed that's updated of all of the calendars brought into my calendar application. I can put this in any calendar application because it's a standard. Again, you have this data. Put it in as many formats as you possibly can to make your users happy. If you look at all of the big social sites that do anything, whether it be around contacts or around calendaring or around events or whatever, like upcoming.org and event sites like that, they want to make it possible for you in whatever flavor of whatever application you want, make that available. And in this case, iCal was the winner. So the way that we did this, and this is a kind of an ongoing style of doing things, we made an action result. In ASP.NET MVC, there's the action result, which is kind of the root class. There's things like content result or view result, if you want to show a view or just show a little bit of content. But you can derive your own. In all of these examples, these are file download results. These are kind of files that are being downloaded. File download result is a base class that you can derive from that expects that you're about to download a file, and it's going to pop that dialog. So in this case, I made an iCal result. So someone requests the feed, we actually cache it, we find the upcoming dinners, and then we return the iCal result. iCal result derives from file result. So this is one level below action result. And this allows you to pass in things like the MIME type. Nice and clean. Now, and this, of course, isn't a generic iCal result because it knows about nerd dinners, but I wasn't intending it to be. I made a couple of them. I've got the iCal result that takes a dinner, and then I've got the one that takes a bunch of them. And then what the file result gives you is this override write file. So you just override write file. In this case, I spin through the list of dinners, convert them from dinners to iCal events. I'll show you that in a second. And then just serialize it and write that file out. Really, really easy to do. And again, because it's a standard, I got to use some cool stuff like this D-Day iCal serialization library, which is a .NET library that handles a lot of this work for you. Not only will it allow you to create iCals, but also read them. Hopefully, if I'm doing my job, this will have you thinking about, oh, I can do that. Or even a small intranet application can benefit from this. A lot of people have even legacy applications that might be 5-6 years old, but they've updated a bunch of things, but that application works fine. Maybe if you added a feed of some kind to that, you could help that data escape. Even something as simple as, we go and look at this web-based calendar can then turn into an iCal feed that can get then fed into Outlook or any application. With OpenSearch, maybe you have an application that's internal to your company or often used that people have to visit to search. You could implement OpenSearch. Maybe you have a social application now that you wish connected to Twitter, but you haven't found TweetSharp and Link to Twitter and .NET OpenAuth and these libraries that enable that social interaction. Like I said, the first step is really kind of the awareness that these things are out there. And as we went around exploring them, we found that there's a whole pile of stuff. Now, the number one most requested feature for the Nerd Dinner application was OpenID login, which is great, and I wanted to support that, but we were concerned because we already had this classic login style. And this is kind of the challenge of success, right? We put up this little sample, and like 3 days later, I want to reset my password. And of course, we haven't implemented that yet. And I was like, well, I didn't really think anyone was going to use this thing. And now, fast forward, and we've got like, you know, 2,000 dinners, and like almost 20 of them are legitimate, non-test data. So, you know, those, I need to support those 20 people. And how do I deal with people who've created dinners with classic users, but now people want to RSVP with OpenID, or someone wants to RSVP with OpenID, wants to make a dinner with OpenID, but then RSVP classic? This became a problem. You have to think about the problems of authentication and authorization and how you're going to deal with that. We have a membership database that's using ASP.NET membership that is separate from the dinner database. And this was a good decision right off the bat. We used all of the out-of-the-box membership stuff that was built in. So we're issuing forms authentication cookies. If you've ever used forms auth, you're probably familiar with that. You say formsauthentication.signin, or you can use the lower-level stuff and call these things out. That was actually kind of the saving grace. What we ended up doing, and I think I've, let's see if we can show some local data here. I don't think there's anything private in here. Hopefully not. This would be our little local test data. And we changed the database because it turns out that the ID, the name that we were showing, like if you log in as S. Hanselman, was also the same thing that we were storing in the database as your ID. So we would show you, hello, S. Hanselman, and then we would say in the database, S. Hanselman is the owner of this thing. So we separated that. So like, for example, we used to say hosted by Scott Goo, hosted by Bill G, right? We added hosted by ID. So now there's hosted by ID, which in this case is an open ID. Let me zoom in on that. So here's the ID, and this is where things get interesting. We're not talking about IDs like database IDs that are numbers or integers. We're talking about a GUID, right? A GUID, a globally unique identifier. And what's more GUID-y than a website that you own? And that's the whole idea kind of behind OpenID, is that if I claim this this site, then I can claim that it is unique, and I claim that it is mine, then it is unique. So the ID that we use to indicate that a dinner is owned is my OpenID login, or what's called your claimed identifier. So for people who are classic, we use the exact same stuff as before. And for new people, we have a display name. So we use the OpenID stuff. Notice I get this nice pop down, and I start typing in Hanselman.com. And the OpenID stuff from Andrew Arnott and the .NET OpenAuth guys actually goes and discovers, using AJAX, dynamically calling out to talk to that, see if it is, in fact, an OpenID endpoint. I hit log on, and it goes off to my personal OpenID provider, and yours may be different. And I'm told, I'm going to sign into Nerd Dinner now, is that okay? We do that submission, and then it says, welcome, Scott Hanselman. So I'm logged in now as Scott Hanselman from the OpenID. That is enabled by separating, what we did is we separated these two controllers. There's the account controller that you may have seen if you've looked at ASP.NET MVC, and we made an auth controller. So we kept all the classic stuff as before. We made an auth controller that's going to be handling all of the OpenID work. And this is going to be using the .NET OpenAuth library and the .NET OpenAuth OpenID stuff. The discovery, that was that moment where I typed in Hanselman.com and it went off and did some AJAX and tried to discover whether or not Hanselman.com was really legitimate. And I just had to call AJAX discovery. And again, you see that the .NET OpenAuth guys, which are really known for having really good controls for web forms developers, actually have an MVC solution that feels like MVC, right? They have action results that line up nicely and feel like MVC. And for web forms developers, you can drag that entire control over and get the same experience. I just have to give Andrew and those guys props for doing that. And then on the way back, if they authenticated, you can actually ask when you log in with OpenAuth, you're actually saying, well, I don't just want to log in, but there's some stuff I'm going to need. And this is one of the nice things about OpenID is you can say, I need some of your claims, right? You claim to be first name Scott. You claim to be last name Hanselman, will you allow me to see those? So if I log in with like Google's OpenID implementation, it'll say, we're about to log you into Nerd Dinner, and they want to know these things. And it'll actually list out what you're about to send to that site. And then you can decide whether or not you want to allow that or not. So then we have to deal with that. So we say, well, let's go get their friendly identifier. That's what we're going to display. And then we say, get the claims response. Did they give us their email? Because you don't have to. Well, and if they did, we can use that. But otherwise, we'll use their full name. And then the interesting part happened. And I thought that this was cool because it was one of those things that I didn't think was going to work as smoothly as it did. Just these three lines of code. We made a forms authentication ticket. Okay? We haven't done anything with ASP.NET membership yet, but we made a forms authentication ticket. We put the username, that claimed identifier, what we would have ordinarily put S. Hanselman, and I put their URL, right, their OpenID URL, their new ID. We put that in the cookie because that's what you would have put from a forms auth perspective. What's important about this is trying to map how OpenID thinks about identity and how ASP.NET thought about identity. And then I put their alias, and that last line there, that's the Scott Hanselman. So the ID is unique, and then the alias, because I wanted to make sure that someone couldn't just log in and say that their name was Scott Hanselman and then have me go and say, oh, well, you must own this dinner because your names are the same. So display name is completely separate from ID. So you can make these auth tickets, encrypt them, and then just add the cookie. And considering that all of the MVC guys that like wrote the MVC framework are in the room, this part they're either going to think is clever or they're going to think is scary. So where's Alon? Alon, where are you? He left already? That's just sad. Phil, are you awake? Okay, there's Phil. So Phil, on stage live, will you tell me whether this was a good idea or not? Because I didn't get a chance to have you review this. So we make that ticket. And in the post-authenticate request, this is your last kind of opportunity to figure out what's going on, we crack open the ticket, the forms auth ticket, we make sure that it's cool, and then we have this nerd identity because we needed more information than ASP.NET membership could support, so we made a nerd identity. It implements iIdentity. We make that, we add it to a principal, and we put that on the current user. So this allows us to extend ASP.NET membership so we could support both classic users that would log in exactly as before and then have OpenID users that would log in, be issued the exact same cookie, and then all of the code everywhere in the application that would display their name and say things like that just worked. Phil, what do you think? Stupid? You're not paying attention, are you? That's okay. It's good, though? It's not offensive? It didn't make you like, No? Really? That makes me feel better. I'm glad. Thank you, Phil. There were a couple of different issues that we had to think about with the database, and we wanted to make sure that we didn't break anything. This is a huge challenge because we don't have any kind of a support staff. There's just like me and John. So, hi, John. Hey, did you figure that search thing out? How's that working out? Oh, you're checking it in? And then I'll bring it down, and then we'll deploy it live on stage? Now, considering, you think we should totally do that? Don't you think that would be asking for a lot of trouble? Dude, totally check it in. Let's do that. Which is even funnier because what I'll end up doing is dragging it over with SmartFTP, which will be nice because my talk on deployment on Wednesday, which is if you're using Xcopy, you're doing it wrong, will be... that'll be a nice little cross-promotional tie-in. Cool. One of the other things that we added was support for RSS. This is kind of a gimme. But I kind of wanted to see how easy it was. And this is a really interesting thing. If you go and search or Google with Bing for RSS and ASP.NET MVC, I'm going to get as much traction out of that joke as I possibly can. And I encourage you to do that as well. Thank you. He laughed. Now I feel better. The energy of the laughter just propels me forward to the last few minutes of this talk. I wanted to see how easy this was. So go out there and search the web for RSS and ASP.MVC, and you will find like four or five completely different ways that someone would have imagined how to do that. And the thing is that they all have good ways and bad ways. So I search around, and the clever people use an RSS result, right? You've seen me do an iCal result and action results. I've been doing everything custom action results. iCal results and everything I'm doing custom. So I said, well, of course I'll make an RSS result. So then I call like the master of ASP.NET MVC, like the world's most famous blogger, a Jeff Atwood, and I say, dude, I got this really amazing implementation of like RSS result. How do you, oh great one, because I got to be cool with Jeff, right? At Stack Overflow, do this. I'm doing it with an RSS result. Ah, what do you think? Oh, great, Jeff. Oh, that's stupid. We just stick it in a view. What are you talking about? Yeah, we have a view, and we just kind of like get all the HTML crap out of there, and we just type it in, you know. We used to do string.format, and then now we do this view. And it works great. And it was like crickets. I was like, thank you. You know, it's like kind of going up to the mountain to receive the wisdom, you know, from the ages, you know, and you go, tell me, ogre, be happy. Really, be happy. That's what you've got for me. Be happy. I go up the mountain and I want your wisdom and you give me be happy. But that's effectively what Jeff said, right? Was if it works for you and the implementation is what you need it to be, then do that. It may not necessarily be testable in that way. So that was one of the things that I wanted to focus on is that for the tests, we... Ah, excuse me. That was a T. I could kill someone with that T. Test. For Jeff, that worked. But I wanted to do some custom stuff here. And again, my goal with all of this stuff was simple open standard, simple library. So while I recognized that I could have kind of done what Jeff and those guys did and copied this into a view and then, you know, marked it up, you could kind of visualize how that would be done. It just felt like it wasn't in the spirit of what I was already doing. So I made an RSS result, and I derived from fire result again. It almost looks exactly like the iCal stuff. And this was kind of cool because I wanted to see how simple this could be. And then I remembered that .NET 3.5 actually supports syndication, like built in. And this is one of the things about .NET that is both kind of our greatest strength and our greatest weakness, is that, you know, oh, there's a library for that. I think maybe we could get that to be like a thing, right? You think that that would be, hey, there's a library for that. No one has ever done anything like that before. We could all just start saying that, like, yeah, I do this in .NET. Hey, there's a library for that. That wouldn't be derivative at all. There's a library for that, and the problem is you have to know that, right? You have to find your way. .NET is so big. So turns out that syndication item and syndication has been in there for a long time, like years. It's in system.servicemodel.syndication. It's all part of WCF. Okay, so brain explodes, right? For each dinner in dinners, I make the little content string, which is just the description. And then I say, make a new syndication item using a class that's built into .NET. I use my tiny URLs. And then I just say, syndication feed, pass in items. And then I can use either an RSS 2.0 feed formatter or I can use an Atom formatter. And then spit that out using the standard write to stuff, that file result. So again, another example of, I don't know, what is that, like 20 or 30 lines of code? The thing that's funny about this, and tell me if this happens to you, though, and I think John and I, who've been working on this late into the night, will say that you put in the hours, right? We put in like boy, I think I put like 3 hours into this one feature. And then you look back at it and you go, look at that 20 minutes of work right there. I'm looking at 20 minutes of work, and it took 3 hours. I think that's the learning process. I mean, that's how it works for me as a person who's kind of always trying to learn and always find these new things, is that I want to write code so that at the end I'm like, oh, you know. So now the next time, like, I could do this, I'm going to totally tell my boss that it was going to take 3 hours, and then it's totally going to take 20 minutes, and then I'm going to go to Chipotle. Right? That's totally what I'm going to do. I just hate looking. I don't know if that's a good, is that a feeling of being a good programmer or a bad programmer, to look at code and say, all right, I could totally rock that in 20 minutes now, right? After 3 hours. What do you think, John?
I can't use the 3 hour and 20 minutes, you know, also.
Well, those are Hansel minutes, though. Right. So 3 hours, this took a week. Right, but we can't say that on stage, John. You have to understand how showmanship works, right? Three hours is a week, a Hansel week. Actually, yeah, my buddy Travis is the guy who invented Hansel minutes, because I have a bad habit of totally saying that this will take just a few minutes. And he would like, yeah, those are Hansel minutes, right? So yeah, that'll be done in like an hour or whatever. And, you know, a week later and I'm still working on the feature. So yeah, Hansel minutes was actually invented as an insult. So thanks, Travis. All right, So what's that one? That's OData. And OData is cool. OData is not just cool because it has like 15 names, but OData is cool because I think it's really going to it's going to turn out to be something interesting. Now, I've been talking about OData for a long, long time, except I've been saying Astoria. And then I was saying ADO.net Data Services, and now it's WCS Data Services OData Format Implementation, something like that. Forget about the names. Forget about the names and think about what it does. If I click on that, we're going to get odata.svc, and we see dinners and we see RSVPs. I'm going to drop over into Visual Studio, and let's type in odata. We just make odata service derived from data service. And we've got a couple of what are called service operations. Service operations are kind of like web services, except they're being called using REST type things. In these cases, you're GETs. Dinner's near me, and then you see an example URL there, and then find upcoming dinners. But the interesting thing is that the entities inside of NerdDinner, which are dinners and RSVPs, are being exposed automatically. You're going to hear a lot about this tomorrow, so be listening in the keynote for some of the cool things that are happening in OData tomorrow. But I can go and start walking around inside of this entity model, just inside of here, and say, like, dinners, or dinners at 1, or, you know, dinners at 1 hosted by... $value as a dollar. Is it slash value? I always forget how to do this. I think it's slash. Right? And this is the part where it's like, hey, thanks, Microsoft. You just invented the query analyzer, except you put it in the URL. You know, innovation. What's interesting about this is that we're not just exposing our database. We're exposing our data entities, and we have complete control over that. So it's not about taking your database and putting it out on the web. It's about taking the shape of the data as you think about it. In this case, dinners and RSVPs might not even be what the database looks like. And presenting that out as well as additional services and not making it available like this, although that's interesting, but being available made programmatically to all sorts of different clients. One thing I'll show you also is that this is Atom Pub. Okay, this looks a lot like a feed. If you actually turn on feed reading view in IE, this will look like a blog. Except the items inside of this are data. It's not content HTML, it's content XML. So I zoom in on this, you can see the shape of the data, right? But this isn't necessarily convenient. I might want to go and do something like format JSON. Yeah, I'll do it this way. I'm always getting these things confused. There we go. Let's do that in this browser. Do-do-do. So the OData service with a little attribute that I added is pulling JSON down from just by adding, changing something in the URL. OData services will automatically return JSON if you say in the HTTP headers, accept JSON. So in this case, I've just added a little extension so I could return JSON by changing the URL to support things like JSONP, or it'll do that automatically. All of this is built in. This is the exact same data, just shaped a little bit differently. So I'm going to bring up LinkPad. And if you haven't spent any time with LinkPad, like seriously, just stop, stand up, leave this talk right now, and go download LinkPad, because it's that awesome. Please don't leave. So I can say, add connection, and I can pick link to SQL, and I can wander around in the entity framework, and I can mess around. Or I can say WCF data services and point it to this feed. And hit OK. And see my data. It's not like web services. Okay, it's different. I could come over here and say, from D in, There we go. Dinner select D. So now we're querying their dinner. Now we start talking about platform stuff, social platform type stuff. Let's bring up, so these are dinners hosted by me. So we're doing a link query. These are just dinners that I've hosted. We can look at the lambdas. We can look at the SQL. That's what got sent over the wire. So this is like link to SQL, except it's link to REST. And that link query, that link expression tree, turned into that query. So what could I do with that? Da, da, da. I don't have any sound effect or anything. So da, da, da. And I can't use any songs you would recognize because I'd have to pay royalties. So yeah. And I don't know how Chariots of Fire goes, but da, 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 something like that. Da, 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 da. Yeah, I think it really adds to the talk. This is using a thing called Power Pivot inside of Excel. It can set all sorts of things, and I'm just going to bring back the dinners and hit finish. And this is going to allow you, this allows you to basically kind of take and query chunks of data from the interwebs. And then do things like pivot tables and charts inside of Excel. And again, this is an OData thing. Just by making the data available, I can start doing all sorts of crazy stuff with it. Let me see. Hosted by country. So this is dinners hosted. We're doing pretty good, actually. We're pretty diverse. Syria, Paraguay, Eritrea. Rock on. Wherever you are, hosting your dinner. In the U.S., sorry. That information is all coming down using OData. OData.org is the site you want to watch. You want to watch it today, and then you want to watch it tomorrow morning, because it'll change. And interesting stuff will be on there. This is an open data format. So when you hear about the OData format specification and you hear about WCF data services, this is an implementation of OData. And you'll see, you know, PHP implementations of OData and all sorts of stuff like that. So if my cheesy little social site can now make its information available on the web, whether it be via Flare or whether it be inside of Outlook, or in RSS, or in Excel, what other social platforms that are maybe run by people in the room, or maybe that you've heard of, or large databases that provide all sorts of value on the web, could we start querying? It makes the whole idea of a mashup a lot more interesting. I want you to look at the Nerd Dinner sample and think about what you're writing and which one of these little additions that you could add that would somehow make your data available. Because the goal here is, right, is to make that data available so if someone's excited about it, they can mash it up. We looked at OpenAuth. We saw OpenSearch not work. Do you want to check that in, dude? Oh, dude. Oh, this is going to be, like, epic or horrible. This could be, like, wow. I'm trying to think about, if my badge works tomorrow, will this? Because I mean, with Scott Gu, you know, losing his job over making fun of Ballmer this morning, then that could open up, you know, new things for me. Is like kind of what I'm thinking. But at the same time, right? If this demo fails and like totally doesn't work on stage live, then really, I mean, I just need to stop doing this and go back to teaching college at a state school. Not that state schools are bad, but I'm just saying I was at a state school. Da-da. Again, no music. Da-da, da-da. Bum-bum. What? Scott Goo is not hosting dinners. But I am. All right, let's go do that other thing. No. Are you serious? Sassy. Where? Does it do suggestions? I have to do what? Oh, I have to add the provider? I did. Oh. Oh. Make this my default. I mean, when I search the internet, I search for nerd dinners first. Rejected. Dude, you shouldn't have pushed it. You try to get sassy with the suggestions, and then that's what you get. But let's push the envelope though, and let's do this. Hang on. It's not looking good for you, John. See how I'm delegating responsibility? I just want to point that out. Denied. Sorry, brother. This part worked, though. So that's something. All right, bummer, man. What a downer. Yeah, thank you for that smattering applause, Jesse Liberty. All right, and pity applause. Thank you. All right, that will probably work about 5 minutes after you leave this room, because we will fix it. That is scandalously bad, though. And let's switch back over to here. And if you want all this code, you can watch the check-ins on a moment-by-moment basis. We're going to get all this updated and all this on nerddinner.coplex.com. I would very much like help. So if you're interested in doing something, check it out. Jesse Liberty in the front is working on a Silverlight version of Nerd Dinner. I'm going to, as the second that I get back to my room, set up a Windows Phone 7 Nerd Dinner application and make it look very metro, because I like being metro. Thank you very much for your time and patience.